construction, that's a bond deal. But let it in, we'll put it all together. Somehow I'll put it together.
Thanks.
Hey, Eric. How you doing, Eric? Oh, sure.
We already submitted this minute.
Hi, how are you?
Can we give you our handouts?
If I've got those, they're on there. I don't need any handouts that you sent. If you have new ones, then I don't.
No, I have sent mine, but I guess I'll just leave them here.
You can leave them here for the public. You can put them back on this, in this rack out here, and people may want them.
Just be brought additional written testimony, which I'd also give them.
Is this different?
Yes.
Why don't you give it to me? You give it to me, I'll put it in, and you'll have it. If I can, you know, that'd be great.
Perfect.
So if you have additional testimony that you haven't, that you didn't send in, then you can give that to me also. Check the book, whichever I'm sure of. Can you see okay? You wanna come up here? Okay.
sheriffs to be able to shield that. And it's just unworkable. And I hope that you look at this project and get it started. It was on the Association of Oregon Counties and the Chief Justice in advance of the 2015-17 session. And it really deserves attention. It is a big deal. And I think the building really needs to be replaced. There's some structure left in it that might be usable, but it really is in dire need of fixing. I just can't implore you enough of how cramped these spaces are for the judges, the jurors, and the witnesses, and the defendants. It's just an unworkable situation, which causes a lot of angst about safety. So thank you very much for your time, and I hope you look on this project favorably.
No, thank you, Representative Holby. Next up will be Lisa Nato, Commissioner Tootie Smith, and Congresswoman Darlene Hooley. On deck will be Dana Richardson, Chris Maples, Craig Morris, and Debbie Koreski.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lisa Nato, and our firm represents the National Trust for Historic Preservation. We appreciate the opportunity to testify today on the Willamette Falls locks and the funding proposal that's under consideration for the locks. Many people don't know, I certainly didn't until a couple years ago, that the Willamette Falls are the nation's second largest waterfall by volume of water after Niagara. This is truly a national treasure that we have in our community. The locks were opened in 1873 and then were transferred to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, with some support by the state, by the way, in 1915. I've submitted a historic timeline for the record, since I know some of you are history buffs. There are three major projects underway at the falls, and I've submitted a fact sheet for your review on those. The Legacy Project would provide public access to the falls through Riverwalk and redevelopment of the Blue Heron site. The designation as a state and national heritage area is also underway. And together, these three projects provide kind of an unparalleled opportunity in Oregon to not only celebrate our history and culture, but provide an economic development boost for our community and for our state. There is a lot of money in cultural and historic tourism. And so we are here because the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers closed the locks in 2011. The commercial tonnage that's passing through the locks has declined over the years, and yet this is vital to our local community and to our region. This proposal would fund needed repairs, and I now appreciate your thoughtfulness on this and would like to introduce Commissioner Clackamas County Commissioner Tootie Smith.
Thank you very much. Clackamas County is united in support for the Willamette Falls locks funding proposal, and we appreciate your consideration of the request. I am also co-chair with Annette Mattson of PGE of the Willamette Falls Working Group that issued this proposal. The mission of the working group is to lead efforts with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to repair and reopen the locks to full operational status to river travel. Additionally, I'm a member of a state task force working toward a long-term solution, and that was part of Senate Bill 131 that you approved of last session. Thank you very much. We are working in partnership with Metro, West Lynn, Oregon City, the National Trust for Historic Preservation, and others to accomplish this mission. We have advocated with the Corps and our congressional delegation in D.C. with great success. We also have received support for the repair and reopening of the locks from cities and counties up and down the Willamette River from Eugene to Portland. Mayor Russ Axelrod of West Lynn and Mayor Tim Knapp of Wilsonville are issuing letters of support, and the Association of Oregon Counties also has voted to support this request. The repair and the reopening of the locks are vital for the future of the Willamette River area projects and for the economic development of our region. Thank you, and I urge your support.
Co-chairs Gerard and Reed and members of the subcommittee, for the record, I'm Darlene Hooley, and I thank you for your consideration of the Willamette Falls locks funding proposal. I also represent the National Trust for Historic Preservation. We thank you for passing Senate Bill 131 last session and creating a state's task force to consider and recommend solutions for the long-term operation and future of the Willamette Falls locks. I'm pleased to tell you that former Governor Barbara Roberts is the convener, and we had our first meeting in January, and it went very well. However, our goal is to repair and reopen the locks as soon as possible. The locks are vital to economic development of the region. This proposal moves us towards that goal. The locks could also be important in case of the Cascadia subduction area event. If bridges fail, we may need to use the river to transport people and goods up and down the river. While in Congress, I was able to keep the locks open because of their importance to our local communities and businesses. Now we need to work together and build partnerships to repair and reopen the locks. This funding proposal does that. With the state, Metro, Clackamas County, and local communities working together, I believe we can succeed in reopening the locks for commercial traffic and for the public to access the river. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Next up, Dana Richardson, Chris Maples, Craig Morris, and Debbie Koreski. On deck, Steve Lawrence and Dan Spatz.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dana Richardson, Deputy Director for Legislative and Policy Affairs at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. The Commission approved 7 capital construction items to be forwarded to the legislature for consideration during this session. In order to provide the approval, the governor provided criteria to evaluate the projects that were limited to technical adjustments to previously approved projects and emergency needs defined as those requiring imminent life or safety needs or arising from a catastrophic event such as Umpqua Community College. The Commission also applied its own criteria that it typically uses to evaluate capital construction projects. Based on these criteria, the Commission forwarded 3 technical projects, 2 scope changes, and 2 emergency requests, not including the Umpqua Community College request that was heard in the Education Subcommittee earlier this week. I will just briefly give you an overview of what those requests are, and then you'll hear from institutional representatives as a follow-up. The community college projects include 2 scope changes, 1 at Lynn Benton Community College to purchase land for a college nursing and allied health facility that would be located in Lebanon rather than Albany, as well as Southwestern Oregon Community College constructing a new building to remodel onto an existing health building on campus. There's also a technical correction. Most of the bonding flowed over from CCWD to the HEC in the transition, but one project got left out is the Clackamas Community College Harmony Campus Phase 2, and another request from Blue Mountain Community College to use lottery bonds as a match for a previously approved GO project. From the universities, 3 projects, a request to split a previously approved appropriation to Portland State University, a request from Southern Oregon University for Jefferson Public Radio, and a third from the Oregon Institute for Technology regarding significant infrastructure failures to their North Utility Corridor and storm drainage project.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Sherrod and Reed and members of the committee. My name is Chris Maples. I'm president of the Oregon Institute of Technology, a.k.a. Oregon Tech. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to explain our projects today. Oregon's public universities truly do appreciate the support that you provided us in 2015, and especially your focus on capital renewal funds so that we can maintain the structural integrity and accessibility of our campus buildings. We have provided you with a summary of our emergency capital request, as well as a letter of support signed by all 7 university presidents in support of these requests. And so, starting with Oregon Tech, each of us will describe quickly our projects. Within the past few months, Oregon Tech experienced 2 separate imminent life safety incidences affecting critical student services facilities, first involving the North Utility Corridor electrical supply feed, and the second involving the College Union Building storm drainage system. The North Utility Corridor that provides electricity from Oregon Tech solar field experienced a power failure necessitating the immediate closure of the College Union, which serves as a student hub and kitchen for students living on campus. not feeding students on campus is really bad. Water is able to also enter the College Union electrical supply feed, immersing the high voltage cables, causing short circuits and an electrocution hazard. Electrocuting students is even worse. The Oregon Tech staff believes the severity of these findings necessitate immediate action or we risk major disruptions to educational programs. College Union's storm drainage system, which lies directly beneath the College Union, had this failure that was noticed when part of the floor of the College Union suddenly dropped about 3 inches, interestingly enough, right in front of a donor wall. And again, as before, there are opportunities for a lot of water drainage to move into electrical areas and result in an electrical hazard.
Sorry, Mr. President.
Not done. That was it. Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Gerard, Co-Chair Reed, committee members. My name is Craig Morris. I'm the Vice President for Finance and Administration at Southern Oregon University. SOU is requesting two projects for your consideration. The first one, Jefferson Public Radio. We are planning an addition to our theater building for the new offices for Jefferson Public Radio. They're currently housed in the basement of one of our academic buildings, and the foundation of Jefferson Public Radio Foundation has been wanting to improve their situation for a long time. The debt service on the 11F bonds, though, the obligation of SOU will be paid by the Jefferson Public Radio Foundation to SOU. Our second project is the McNeil Project. You may recall back in 2014, you approved an emergency deferred maintenance project for McNeil Hall of $21.3 million. Thank you. As we've gotten into that project, we have found that the deteriorating infrastructure of that building, as well as the required code compliance that we would have to accomplish for the city of Ashland when we start that remodeling project, requires us to tear down the building completely and build a new building. And so we are coming forward and asking for an additional $2 million of E11Q to be able to accomplish that project. It's actually a $3 million project, but the Southern Oregon University Foundation has started a fundraising campaign to raise the other $1 million. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Debbie Koreski. Portland State is requesting the repurposing of an existing F bond authorization. By doing this, you'll allow the university to save money on existing debt service. So anyway, I'm happy to answer any questions, but it's really more just a repurposing.
Thank you for being brief. Okay, next up, Steve Lawrence and Dan Spatz. On deck, Randy McKay and John Sider.
Co-Chair Gerard, Co-Chair Reed, and committee members, thank you for this time. I am Steve Lawrence, Mayor of the Dalles. The Civic Auditorium is an iconic building that was constructed in 1921 and dedicated to veterans. It contains a floating ballroom, a community room, fireside room, and its original theater, which can hold 900 guests. It was saved from the wrecking ball in 1990, and the community and city, with the use of donations, foundation, and urban renewal grants in excess of $2 million, have been able to restore all but the theater. It is in the center of downtown. The theater acoustics are described as one of the best in Oregon, compared even to the Ashland theaters. There's nothing comparable between Portland and Boise. It will become the centerpiece for music performance in the Columbia River Gorge. Approximately $5.5 million will be needed to return the theater to its original grandeur. The city has committed over $900,000 in the past and has budgeted another $300,000 this year. If the legislature will grant $1 million to this project, it will allow for match with Google Enterprise fee dollars and foundation grants sufficient to start and finish construction in the next 2 years. Architectural, engineering, and theatrical design is complete. The time is now. Thank you for considering this request, and I would say it has a hydraulic stage which lowers into an orchestra pit and can extend the stage and also extend a dance area below, so it's a unique feature. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Co-Chairs Gerard, Reed, and committee members. I am Dan Spotts, the Dallas City Council and Urban Renewal Board. Thank you for your time today. I urge your support of Representative Huffman's request for our Granada Block project. The Dallas Urban Renewal has invested hundreds of thousands of dollars and countless staff hours in this downtown revitalization initiative. We have completed all reviews and assembled a sterling development team. This essential core component of downtown revitalization will promote jobs, housing, Main Street, historic preservation, and interpretation. Your investment of $1 million will close the gap, leveraging $25 million in private capital to create a destination complex and well over 100 permanent jobs, several times that number by filling vacant retail spaces. Centerpiece is the Granada, constructed in 1929 as the first theater west of the Mississippi to show a talking motion picture. Blighted adjacent structures will be replaced with a hotel, restaurant, cultural center, and parking, all complementary to one of Oregon's oldest cities. Bicyclists along the historic Columbia River Highway, cruise ship passengers, and business conference attendees will grow our economy. This rural partnership with one of the world's largest hoteliers will anchor downtown retail and leverage vertical housing by repurposing empty spaces as affordable dwellings. We will create jobs. We will showcase our history. We will turn a blighted block into a $26 million treasure. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you so much.
Mr. Chairs, I request your permission to read a second statement on a separate project representing a person who is not able to be with us today.
You've got 22 seconds.
Dear co-chairs and committee members, I speak on behalf of Representative Huffman's request for retention and expansion funds for the Sunshine Mill and Copa Divino, a growing rural economic development success story. We have grown from 85 jobs in the past 5 years. It has been a leader in downtown renovation and restoration. We project up to 450 jobs with your investment. Thank you for your consideration.
Okay, great. Thanks. Randy McKay and John Sider. And then on deck is going to be Sarah Miller, Andrea Henderson, and Walt Nolte.
Thank you. My name is John Snyder, and I'm co-chair of the Holly Theater Restoration Committee. As you probably know, Medford was one of those economies that was timber dependent and has gradually been working toward a full employment status and a healthy economy. We're still behind the northern parts of the state, but we're getting there. 10 years ago, nobody saw the booming wine industry coming. Now it is flourishing. We're seeing amazing things. There's another cluster on the horizon, and that's the entertainment cluster, which includes live performance, theater, filmmaking, and it's emerging, and it's coming out of these natural, wonderful facilities we already have, such as Oregon Shakespeare, Brit Festival, Ashland Film Festival. So this is a bright and shining opportunity for Southern Oregon. We are restoring a 1,000-seat theater. We visited the Dallas Theater. That's a wonderful project. I hate to waste my time touting them, but it's a good thing because it's such an economic stimulus, and there are a number of state agencies that have identified this as economic impetus for the community. I'm going to defer to Randy now.
Thank you. He mentioned some of the Oregon institutions that are working on behalf of restoration of historic theaters. My name is Randy McKay.
Thank you.
The executive director of Jefferson Live, the entity working on the restoration of the Holly Theater and the operation of our Cascade Theater down in Redding, California. Those Oregon institutions and agencies working on behalf of historic theater restoration include Restore Oregon, the Oregon Arts Commission, Oregon Main Street, Travel Oregon, the Oregon Governor's Regional Solutions Office, the Cultural Trust, the University of Oregon, and Pacific Corp. And they're doing that because they realize that historic theater restoration is one of the surest forms of downtown revitalization of historic downtown cores. Because of the amazingly sound structure of the Holly Theater building, this project is $4.3 million, and with over 1,500 local donors behind the project already and 41% of the project's goal already raised. The sooner the Holly opens, of course, the sooner the state and Southern Oregon can reap those economic benefits. According to Americans for the Arts, the Holly in An operating Holly will generate more than $3 million of additional revenue in the Rogue Valley economy every year and create roughly 87 full-time equivalent jobs in the neighborhoods surrounding the theater, while spurring about $250 million in additional building and development activity, while bringing about 10,000 new hotel guests to our region every year. Our business model is based off of 12 years of operation of our Cascade Theater in Reading and is designed to operate without annual government, private, or foundation support. So I thank you for your consideration of funding of this project, and I look forward to seeing you at our opening.
Good, thanks so much. Okay, next up, Sarah Miller, Andre Henderson, and Walt Nolte.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Miller. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Technology for Oregon's Department of Human Services. I'm here today in support of our request for Q bonds to provide state match for the department's integrated eligibility system. Many of you know I was the project director for OHA's implementation of Oregon Eligibility, the One System, which has been successfully processing Medicaid eligibility applications since December 15th. The Department of Human Services wants to leverage that infrastructure, take advantage of the fact that Kentucky built a system for additional program to meet human service eligibility and continue to provide a infrastructure that would allow Oregonians to prepare a single application for multiple state agency services. It matters to you to do this now because if you authorize this funding request, we'll be able to take advantage of CMS 9010 money that will greatly reduce the amount of state general fund that it will take to deliver this functionality. It will cost less, it's better for Oregonians, it's the most reasonable way to support the policy agenda that you all passed in House Bill 2219, wanting and desiring a single application for human service programs. So happy to answer any questions, and the department looks forward to support of your request.
Okay.
One question.
Oh, come on.
Just one. Just a clarification. You said, I just want this to be on the record. You said that for this particular project, we have 90-10 match now, 90 federal, 10 state. That actually expires at a certain time, right?
Co-chairs, Senator Devlin, thank you for the clarification. CMS's ability to use 90-10 money for the benefit of other programs expires on December 31 of 2018. The department estimates this as a 33-month project. So if you authorize us here, it will actually be a blended rate, about 85% total federal funds and 15% state general fund.
Thank you so much. Andrea?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Andrea Henderson, Oregon Community College Association. We're here in support of a couple of the priorities for the community colleges this session. First and foremost is the support for Umpqua Community College, and particularly the rebuilding of Snyder Hall. Additionally, we're supportive of the four technical changes that you heard from Dana Richardson earlier. And last, I'd like to talk in detail about the requests from the other 16 colleges around campus safety and security. In light of the October 1st event at Umpqua Community Colleges, we engaged Margolis Healy, a national expert on campus safety and security, to work with our colleges regarding the campus safety and security needs. We do have a proposal for approximately $15 to $20 million in campus safety needs that really are focused around locking systems so that if campuses need to go into lockdown, they're able to lock down, particularly to be able to lock doors from the inside, and secondly, around alert systems so that campuses can be notified in the event of some sort of incident. We do have a couple of colleges here to talk in detail about their projects and have a number of projects throughout the state. With that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Nolte from Umpqua Community College.
Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chairs, for the record, my name is Walt Nolte. I'm the interim president of Umpqua Community College. Let me start by saying that, unfortunately, I seem to be becoming somewhat of an expert on campus emergencies. I'm currently helping at Umpqua go through its recovery process, and 3 years ago I was involved in an out-of-state double murder suicide on the campus that I was president at that time. I can tell from these experiences that the damage to the learning environment when one of these occurs on a campus is really, can really, you can't really overestimate what that damage means, what that lack of sense of security exists, what it does to that learning environment. We have nervous, tense people. The smallest incident will trigger some kind of memory. And I'll give you a brief example. Last week, we held our required periodic fire drills, despite trying to notify every student, every faculty, every staff member at the college. We still had people that did not receive that notification, and they were very nervous about it. I want to thank you for your support of UCC's specific request and ask that you support the security enhancements for the other 16 colleges. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to testify that travel more than 100 miles? Those were the people that were prioritized first. If not, Bill Kohmeyer, G.N. Truesdell, I think Brent, Brent. You're with the community colleges. It says legible handwriting, by the way.
Co-chairs and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Kohlmeyer. I'm the public safety director at Chemeketa Community College. I've been at Chemeketa for about 8 years, and prior to that, I was a police officer with the city of Salem for 30 years. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to the committee and describe some of our security needs at Chemeketa as well as some of the other colleges. One of our primary needs, well, first of all, Chemeketa was built in the early 70s before anybody ever thought about active shooters or violent intruders and the need to lock a building down quickly. And as such, our buildings are a combination, have a combination of electronic locks and manual locks. And when we need to, it takes between 30 and 40 minutes to lock our campus down. What we'd like to do is be able to upgrade all of our outside doors to electronic locks so we can lock that our campus down quickly. Additionally, Chemeketa has 8 of our primary buildings are two-story buildings that have skyways connecting them. And it allows access, once inside one building, you have access to all 8 of those buildings. We'd like to be able to secure those skyways so that we can isolate a building. And other community colleges are in the same shape. Most of the community colleges were built long before anybody ever thought about being able to lock down a campus quickly and secure it. And the incident at Umpqua Community College certainly drove home that fact for all of us. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and appreciate your consideration.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and esteemed members of the committee. Thank you for taking the time to hear me today. For the record, my name is Brent Finkbeiner, and I am the board chair of the Oregon Community College Student Association. I'm an Army veteran, and I'm currently a student at Clackamas Community College. This year, more than ever, campus safety has risen as a top priority for Oregon Community College students. Just like you, we speak with our constituents all day, every day. I'm here today to share with you some of the fears and concerns of my brother and sister students. Many community colleges in Oregon are turning 50 this year, and they have aging infrastructure and inferior communication systems. Recently, the Oregon Community College Student Association conducted a survey about students' priority issues. The top priority issue to come up is campus safety. Two of the biggest factors that we can fix right now on campus safety is communication infrastructure and physical security improvements. For communication, we need redundant notification systems that notify us immediately of any incident so we can protect ourselves. For example, CCC Clackamas does not have speakers in the majority of its classrooms. Students are cut off from what's happening outside. If there's a chemical spill, explosion, gunshot, fire, how would we know? We need speakers in the classrooms and outdoors in large open spaces. On top of that, we need physical security improvements, alarm systems, locks on classroom doors, better lighting in our parking lots, and surveillance cameras. I'm asking you, on behalf of all community college students, please release an amount of $15 to $20 million in capital funding as soon as possible. Many of us have the funds to match, and we can act right now. This will save lives today. We know from recent events it's not a matter of if a disaster will hit, it's a matter of when. We need to be prepared. A lesson learned by one is a lesson learned for us all. Thank you for your time today.
Mr. Co-Chairs and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joanne Truesdell. I'm president of Clackamas Community College and immediate past chair of the Oregon President's Council. On behalf of the Oregon President's Council, we are here to support the Umpqua Community College request. Many of us were on the way to Grants Pass when we received word of this tragic event. Separately, 10 of the community colleges have match in hand for our capital safety and security request of between $15 and $20 million. Right now, we have $19.32 million identified. To clarify, this again is a separate request. Our campuses have infrastructure and buildings, as you know, that are 50 years old, and it is the electrical and physical infrastructure that makes all the access controls work that we need to address, and we need to address it immediately. I just want you to know, last night, three quarters of a mile away from our Oregon City campus, an unfortunate incident occurred where we believe somebody committed suicide. What happened is, on the news, it said Clackamas Community College, dot, 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 something about a shooting. And within 5 minutes, I had 35 phone calls, not the least of which were parents, students, and in fact, my own mother, who lives 6.5 hours away. This is really not an exaggeration that our communities, young children, are on our campuses regularly. We are a place where businesses meet, and we really need this support. We have funds. We can be of support to you. We really appreciate your consideration and your action. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Janet Bird and Rob Proshk. On deck will be Shelley Boschart and Dr. Maury Craig.
Good afternoon, Chair Reed, Chair Gerard, and members of the committee. Rob Prash, Network for Oregon Affordable Housing. We're here today to talk about preserving federally subsidized rental housing. Janet Bird and I have worked together for more than two decades to try to ensure that Oregon's housing crisis doesn't unjustly affect the most vulnerable among us. One of the most effective strategies to accomplish that is through preserving housing with federal rental assistance contracts. It's through these rental assistance programs that thousands of our lowest income neighbors can secure a safe and affordable place to call home. Our collaborative approach works. With the legislature's support over the last 8 years, the state's preservation strategies have been remarkably effective. Today, we have 200 projects preserved and federal rental assistance contracts worth more than $900 million secured. But there's more to be done. There are three categories of properties that need our attention. First, there are still several hundred federally assisted properties at risk of opt-out and conversion to market. Others are at risk of failure due to accumulated capital needs and rising operating costs. Second, much of Oregon's public housing stock is older and in need of substantial renovation to remain viable for future generations. Third, there are 62,000 affordable homes in manufactured housing communities in Oregon. Preserving these naturally affordable homes by supporting purchases of communities by the residents or by mission-based nonprofits is good public policy. I've submitted documents that summarize the known pipeline of projects with planned preservation transactions. These are arm's-length sales, stay-in owners of older projects that need to be recapitalized, and aging public housing stock. Looking at only those projects most likely to proceed during the next 5 years, the estimated gap funding needed exceeds $50 million. Now, we understand that level of public support isn't possible this year, but we ask for your attention to this issue and authorization of additional lottery-backed bond funds this year. Thank you for your support and attention.
Chair Reed, Chair Gerard, members of the committee, my name is Janet Bird. I'm the Executive Director of Neighborhood Partnerships and the convener of the Housing Alliance. The Housing Alliance is a coalition of more than 70 organizations from all parts of the state coming together with the knowledge that housing opportunity is the base on which all of our success as a community is built. As you know, Oregon is reeling in every part of the state from a housing crisis. As we work in this session to develop new policy tools and new funding sources to develop new housing opportunity, it's equally important that we make sure that we don't take backward steps. We have a resource or an infrastructure of housing in our communities that is now providing safe, affordable, and well-located homes for households living on very low incomes. Just to take a second and talk about where these homes are and who lives there, there's actually one that you should almost be able to see from this window. A high-rise red brick building right next to Pringle Park is one of the properties that's been recently preserved. It's home to elderly seniors and folks living with handicaps. There's a huge one in South Eugene, a 17-story or 18-story building, home to 222 elderly households and folks living with a disability. We know that that's one of the properties in the pipeline that Mr. Prash just referred to, the pipeline of $55 million in gap financing that we need over the next 5 years. We know that households living in all of these homes have average annual incomes of less than $10,000. There's literally nowhere else that these folks can move, even if they received housing vouchers at the time of the transition. We know that almost 1 in 10 Oregonians live in a manufactured home scattered in parks throughout the community. I'm sure that you're aware of where those communities are within your districts. The good news, as Mr. Prash talked about, is that we know how to save these homes. What we need is the gap financing. Thank you very much for your attention.
Okay, Shelley Bouchard and Dr. Maury Craig. Next up will be David Moon, Faye Stewart, and Liz Rambo. Okay.
Chair Reed, Chair Gerard, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Shelley Bossart Davis, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the Oregon Export Straw Association. We're also an export company, exporting ourselves a little over 2,000 containers per year through now ports of Tacoma and Seattle and a little bit out of Port of Portland. I'm here to talk about or ask for funding for the Oregon State University Indophyte Lab. Oregon exports have struggled a little bit, and actually grass straw is the number one export through the Port of Portland when we were exporting a lot of containers to the Port of Portland. It's a bright spot in Oregon's business, in Oregon's agriculture, and Oregon's export. One of the requirements for us to export this grass straw into the country of Japan is to test for Indophyte. Indophyte is a naturally occurring toxin that is in two varieties of our grass seed, of course, here in grass seed capital of the world. When we bale the grass straw and we ship it to Japan and Korea for cattle feed, we're required to make these tests, which are called Indophyte tests. Oregon State University provides those tests and provides those research for us in order for us to continue to have our exports into Japan. So I'm asking you today to be able to continue funding that, ask for funding for that in order for us to continue our exports to Japan without any delay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Co-chairs, for the record, my name is Maury Craig. I'm a professor of veterinary medicine and the director of the Indophyte Lab. This is just a picture of how in 2000 there were 5,400 cases overseas that shut down, and in the past we're down to zero cases, cooperation between the industry and the Indophyte Lab. This lets you know, as Shelley was telling you, there are 33,000 containers heading out of the Northwest here overseas. We in the vet medicine see three different diseases. The two endophytic diseases and a new emerging disease called ERGOT, and you'll undoubtedly hear about that. The Indophyte Lab then, lastly, is help opening up new markets in the Middle East. This is actually a camel's foot, and was a result of tall fescue toxicosis overseas, and we're establishing and opening up these markets. This is what the Indophyte Lab does. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, David Moon, Faye Stewart, and Liz Rambo. And on deck, John McArdle, Ray Espana, and Sarah King.
Co-Chair Gerard, members of the committee, My name is David Moon. I'm the Director of the Business and Fiscal Services at the Oregon Judicial Department. I'm here today to request an increase in bonding authority in the 11Q bonds for the Oregon Courthouse Construction and Capital Improvement Fund, specifically for the Lane Courthouse Replacement Project. The OCCIF was created in the 13 legislature and was modified in the 14 legislature to provide bonding financing support for construction of courthouses or portions of courthouses that meet specific criteria throughout the state for those counties who can provide their funding match. Bonds have been authorized already for the Jefferson, Tillamook, and Multnomah courthouses, which are currently underway. And as you know, the Jefferson Courthouse will be finished this year, Multnomah likely in the beginning of 2020, and Tillamook is under planning and development right now. As part of this program, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court must review each county's plan to ensure that it meets the statutory requirements as well as the workloads demands of the communities that it serves. The Lane project, as conceptualized, meets the statutory requirements and will meet the county's demands in the future. The Chief Justice has approved this concept, subject to a final review of the completed project plan. The total cost has been estimated along with a project completion date. However, at this time, we're only requesting $1.4 million in the 11Q bonds, which will ensure the completion of the design, the procurement of the construction documents, which will also allow for a more precise estimate of the project's cost and duration. I'd welcome any questions from you, but the folks from Lane also have some things that they would probably answer your questions better.
Co-Chair Senator Gerard and Representative Reed and committee members, I am Faye Stewart, Chair of the Lane County Board of Commissioners. Thank you for holding this hearing. I'm here to ask you for $1.4 million of bonding authority within the Article 11Q bonds that are currently scheduled for the spring of 2017 by the Oregon Treasurer for the purposes of funding pre-construction planning, design, and budgeting related to replacement of the Lane County Courthouse in downtown Eugene. Lane County participated in the Chief Justice established procedure for selecting courthouse replacement and improvement projects in 2014. Our project was one of the four projects the Chief Justice selected, and together we lobbied the package through two public hearings in 2015, but was unfortunate that it was not included for funding in the final version of the bond limit bill in House Bill 5005 from last session. We have continued our work with the National Center for State Courts to gain baseline information on the court's needs. I want to emphasize the timing of our project. If you were to approve the project to be included within the bond sale in the spring of 2017, we will be involved with the design and pre-construction phasing of this project during 17 and 19. If we decide to move forward with the final project, that request could come to you during the 19-21 session. This project construction timeline does not run parallel to Multnomah County's, and it is a subsequent construction project. It is my fear that if we do not act a session to allow us to be included in the biennium's bond sale, that we again would present in 17-19 and we could face some real schedule challenges with other projects currently being considered. We are continuing continuing to analyze our sources of funding and to gain understanding with the breadth of the ownership models that now exist. Our staff has been engaged with the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange.
Sorry. Thanks. Thank you so much. I have to insert somebody here as my, I just didn't see her. Representative McLean is here. Would you please come up and testify?
I think she wants to be here with her.
What's that?
The woman testify.
Can you let the woman?
Let the woman testify.
Oh, I apologize. Come back. I thought you already did.
What's that? She wants to go with the Cornelius people.
Oh, okay.
She wants to go with what?
Sit down.
City of Cornelius. City of Cornelius.
We like Lane County, really. We're fine.
Confusion up here.
Co-chairs Gerard and members of the committee, I'm Liz Rambo. I'm the trial court administrator for Lane County Circuit Court, and I was asked to join the group to update you briefly about the work that the county and the courts have undertaken since we last presented to this committee. I believe it was May of last year. And primarily that's been around a needs assessment provided by the National Center for State Courts. The needs assessment is a study of the long-term realistic needs of the courts and the other building, current building occupants for the Lane County Courthouse in order for the county to move forward with a more precise design and cost estimate with the bond funding that is being requested here. This work that we're doing already includes tasks around projection of the court system growth through the year of 2055, court facility master plan strategies, development of space requirements for the proposed courthouse, and conceptual diagramming on the two current proposed sites. And in the informational packet that you received from the county, the front picture on that shows the two largest sites. Working with the National Center has been a very important step for these courthouse projects because it challenges our thinking about what our actual needs are for the future of court design. Let me give you a simple example. We won't need space for paper file storage in the future. So it's been a really good opportunity for us to move the project forward in the interim, and I appreciate your time and hearing about that today.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, now I can put Andrew.
No, keep your hand down.
Mr. Chairman.
I don't recognize you.
Mr. Chairman.
I don't recognize you.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question.
Sorry.
I got to get on the table.
No,
I
don't recognize you.
Okay, well, I'll leave then.
Okay, I'll recognize you. What do you
want? I have to get this on the record. We started down this road. I'm going to just put this question out here. I don't need a response now, but I need a response within the next few days. We started down this record with courthouses, and we expanded it even beyond what we had anticipated by expanding it theoretically to a 50% match with co-location. Some counties have interpreted that to mean if they have one other state employee other than a judicial employee, that's co-location. Also, there is already another major county seeking these funds, although they're not here today. There are probably several other counties behind them. My question for you is, should we grant these funds, and you would be only getting a portion of them potentially even in theory in 1921, knowing the size of your project, and you might have to wait till 21-23 to get the remaining portion, what would your reaction be to that? And the second thing would be, what if these planning funds were granted to you with absolutely no guarantee that you would be the next project in order? Because I think by that time, there'll be a broader discussion of how we approach county courthouses. That's just a question for the record.
Well, thank you so much.
Quite a question.
You have questions.
He would like you to give that information to the staff.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll be distributor. Okay, I have to work Representative McLean in. Rob Drake and Karen Hill, please. I apologize to the representative. Should have got you in sooner, but trouble reading everybody's handwriting here.
Thank you, co-chairs, and we were happy to wait and listen to the dialogue that you were listening to. It was all very important. I'm Representative Susan McLean, and I'm from House District 29, which is Forest Grove, Cornelius, and West Hillsboro. And we're here asking for one-time monies for a very wonderful project called Cornelius Place. And I'm going to be turning it over to the folks that know the most about Cornelius Place with one statement, so I won't use up all my time. And that is that this is not just a fabulous library and literacy center. It's not just an affordable housing project for seniors, but it's also a game changer for downtown Cornelius, who has to compete with a lot of larger cities around them. It's a game changer because it's the anchor that we need to really have a real downtown center. So you're getting a library, you're getting an affordable housing project, and you're getting a more vital downtown. And so now I would like to turn it over to the city manager, Rob Drake.
Thank you, Representative McLean. Mr. Co-chairs, committee members, I am Rob Drake, and I serve as city manager in Cornelius. And we're here today to talk to you about our mixed-use library and affordable senior housing project. This project already received some state funding from the 2014 legislature, which we greatly appreciated. And I'd like to liken our project to a four-lap mile run We've completed three laps. We're on the fourth lap, and you can help us complete the race with the funding that we have requested. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Karen Hill, who's our library director in Cornelius.
Thank you. My name's Karen Hill. I'm actually very excited about this project. We have raised 66% of the funding we need. We're trying to get to $4.8 million. It's not easy in Cornelius. We have a high poverty level where our average housing income is $9,000 less than Oregon's average. We have 50% of our population is Hispanic. We're a community made up of techie commuters and country folk and migrant workers. The need for a library and a literacy center is very extreme, and I want to provide two examples. On the standard English test at the elementary school across the street from us, third graders, 9% of them met or exceeded the English language test. 9%. It does get better in the fourth grade. 30% were able to pass. In high school, we have a better than average graduation rate, but 13% of the high school students dropped out. These kids need to get over these educational and social barriers that are in our community, and our library has resources and partners and services to help them do this. So I hope that you'll consider our request for $500,000 to complete our project. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, back to the original, John McArdle, Ray Espana, and Sarah King. On deck will be Bill Jerry, Stacy James, and Mark Colbert.
Go ahead.
Okay. Excuse me. Co-chairs, members of the subcommittee, for the record, my name is Ray Espana. I'm the Deputy Executive Director for the Native American Youth and Family Center, oftentimes called NAEF. And today I'm introducing a project that we call Generations, introducing that to the subcommittee. The Generations 2 project consists of the development of an early learning academy, a hub, as well as a Longhouse Community Cultural Center as a part of the Phase 2. I'm pleased to inform you that we broke ground on Phase 1 this last Monday, and that is 40 units of affordable intergenerational family housing, specifically targeted to extract children out of the foster care system. The Native community faces many challenges, not to mention the disparate number of children that are in care. And so this is identified as a potential model. I'm here going to briefly talk about the services that NAEA will provide. And that is kind of the complete wraparound type of services that families and the children will require, ranging from counseling to parenting to employment and training resources. We will also have on site a health access center to begin the with a pediatric focus to begin to develop medical records for children to follow them and into their pre-K careers in school. NAEA will provide the backup and support of services to the children and their families up until third grade, which is a very important milestone. This project addresses the educational challenges facing not only Native children, but all children of color in Portland. The project specifically is in the southeast Portland area called Lentz.
Thank you so much.
Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Sarah King. I'm the Director of Planning and Asset Management for Portland Public Schools. The Generations Project that Ray referred to is a partnership between NAEA and Portland Public Schools. It's located on a former Portland Public Schools site in the Lentz neighborhood. This is an Oregon Solutions project, and in addition to NAEA and Portland Public Schools being partners, other partners include City of Portland, Multnomah County, and several state agencies. This is an innovative model partnership Portland Public Schools has engaged in our third public-private partnership to date. It's a model we hope to replicate because we have scarce capital dollars, and this is for an innovative early learning center. This is a $14 million project. That's in 2018 construction dollars. And we estimate about 100 jobs, both permanent and construction, being created from this project. NEA and Portland Public Schools are looking for funding from all of our partners, hoping to leverage all of the folks that have a vested interest in this project. I want to add that this is both will continue the programmatic partnership that Portland Public Schools has with NEA, and now would then advance into a capital partnership. We're looking for both public and private funding. The private funding would include both a capital campaign from NEA as well as an application for federal New Market Tax Credits. New Market Tax Credits are extremely competitive. Therefore, it's imperative that we have state and local support for this project. We know that funding for this session is limited. Therefore, we hope to be at the top of your list for next year's funding. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Good afternoon. John McArdle, Lynn Benton Community College. Two items today. One, we're supporting the HEC request for a scope change for the movement of our nursing and allied health facility from the Albany campus to the Lebanon campus. It allows some opportunities to work with the medical school, the Samaritan Hospital System, and others in the area. It makes good sense for us. Second, building on what you heard earlier from community college about safety and security, we also have had our safety consultant come through. Our issues are also locking doors, alert systems, and communications. We need abilities to lock doors on our main campus, our centers, and our communication and alert systems are, as was mentioned earlier, 30, 40, almost 50 years old. So that's important to us. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. Okay, Bill Jerry, Stacy James, Mark Goldberg. On deck, Dave Stuckey, Daryl Ficker, Enrique, and Enrique, if there's an Enrique out there, you're next. I'm trying to read your last name. It starts with an F.
Co-chairs and committee, for the record, my name is William Gary. And I'm here today to invite you to participate in an exciting opportunity called the Oregon Manufacturing Innovation District and the Advanced Manufacturing Research Center, Oregon. As you all know, manufacturing is under a tremendous amount of pressure in the region, in the state, in the Pacific Northwest, and in the U.S. as a whole. We have got to be able to compete, or we are going to lose our leverage and advantage in manufacturing here at home. The model that we propose in support of the Oregon Manufacturing Innovation District is a collaborative environment underpinned by industry, academia, and government to create an environment where technical excellence and new opportunity is built into the manufacturing infrastructure. It will also lead to a magnet that will support the influx of manufacturing into the region and bring additional jobs and value to that manufacturing infrastructure. The other bit that is very, very exciting is creating an opportunity to train and equip young people with skills that will support the new and exciting manufacturing technologies that will be created in the Advanced Manufacturing Research Center, Oregon. So we look forward to your partnership. A $10 million investment by the Oregon State Government will secure a significant footstep towards the success of this endeavor, and we will bring along with that industry partners from around the world to support the activity here in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-chairs and committee members, for the record, my name is Stacy James. I'm an administrator for IAM Boeing Joint Programs out at our Gresham facility. We call it Boeing Portland, but it's technically in Gresham. I'm a 28-year member of the Machinist Union and a
correspondent with my 28 years at Boeing Portland. And I serve on several boards in my capacities, including the chairperson for the Machine Tool Technology Board at Portland Community College. I had the privilege of going to Sheffield and seeing the Apprenticeship Training Center and the Research Center. I was thoroughly impressed with both. One of the lessons learned in Sheffield was that they started the Apprenticeship Training Center 10 years after they started the Research Center, and they said had they to do it over again, they would have started them at the same time. To that end, they've developed a state-of-the-art training facility. They've got sponsorships from probably 50 or 60 businesses, that their structure being different in the UK. They sponsor different apprentices with a stipend. Think of it maybe like a multi-employer apprenticeship. So they're employed by different companies. They go to the training center for their training, then they go out to the workplace, then they go back to the training center once a week, then back to the workplace. And they have 250 students in that regard. I think of this as something that could change the landscape for youth in Oregon. We have a tech prep program that we run for high school students, and we can take 12 a year. We run some programs for community college students, and we can take 18 a year. And we had 100 apply for the first program last year and 75 apply for the colleges. So there's a huge demand on the student level. And on the level of employers, I've heard the phrase coined of the silver tsunami. Over half of our workforce can retire, and it's that way across the board in manufacturing. So thank you for your time and consideration of our request for $10 million.
Co-Chair Reed, Co-Chair Girard, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Goldberg, and I'm the Associate Vice President of Workforce Development and Community Education at Portland Community College. I'm here on behalf of the higher education component for the Advanced Manufacturing Research Center proposal. As the state's largest higher education and workforce training institution serving a five-county area, PCC is truly excited about the opportunity to engage in partnership with the Boeing Company, other advanced manufacturing employers, and workforce and higher education partners to support this budget request from the legislature of $10 million. I was part of the delegation that visited the AMRC in Sheffield, England at the end of January, along with members from Portland State, Oregon Tech, Oregon State University, the Oregon Employment Department, Governor's Office, and industry. We learned how the AMRC has transformed a region with 2,000 well-paid staff of highly qualified engineers and apprentices while serving over 500 companies and winning new business through advanced technology and research. The key elements of this project and the vision is transformational partnership and a first-ever development of an AMRC in the United States. This project will combine innovative training to scale up the advanced manufacturing workforce of the future in a dynamic apprenticeship model with advanced technology and research to assist regional businesses to compete globally. In 2008, voters from PCC's five-county district passed a bond levy, and we've made a commitment to Columbia County that we could provide a center for educational opportunities in that region. The Portland Community College Board of Directors has earmarked $9.4 million for development of an initial center. This would be the base capital matching state investment brought into the first phase of this project. This is a one-time request from the legislature for resources matching funds for initial construction. Important to note that there's no roll-up cost into the 17-19 biennial budget. However, it is essential that we secure funding to match the other time-sensitive components, including federal grants and the timelines required for PCC to expend our bond resources in the region. Thank you for your consideration of the proposal and the opportunity to testify.
Thank you so much. Okay, Dave Stuckey, Daryl Vickert, and I think it's Enrique Farver. I'll try it.
Good afternoon, co-chairs, members of the committee. I'm Dave Stuckey, Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. The concept behind our ask today is the build-out of Camp Umatilla, formerly Umatilla Army Depot. What we would like to do, the specific ask in House Bill 5202, is $6.5 million in bonding authority. With that $6.5 million in bonding authority, plus the sale proceeds from Western Oregon University for the building out at RTI, we can drop in $11.5 million into Camp Umatilla. So specifically, we are appreciative of your support and consideration for $6.5 million in 5202 and then $11.5 million in 5203. And so with that, I'll hand it off.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Girard, Co-Chair Reed. My name is Enrique Ferreira, and I'm an academic advisor at Clackamas Community College, and I represent the Classified Association of Employees at the college. I'll be describing briefly some of the matters in regards to safety at the campus. I'm asking for your support to provide the allocations, appropriate funds to provide better safety guidelines and equipment to the colleges around the state, such as Borough Police vehicles, emergency system, hazardous materials, equipment, and other many safety features that are needed to keep the colleges safe throughout the state. One of the goals for me here today is to speak on behalf of my members and requesting your support for us to feel safe, but also the students that we serve. Our goal in the community and in education is to serve the future leaders of education and also in Oregon. We serve veterans, we serve GED students, ESL students, people who are going to be the future of the state, but it's very valuable your input and the support of the allocation of this money to all the community colleges in the state to provide these services. At this time, that's all I have. Thank you.
No, thank you.
My name is Darrell Picker of the Oregon Department of Transportation. Here request $20 million of par amount Article Q funds, general obligation bonds, state radio project. The general fund debt service for the project and the clearance authority for the project were both included in our 2015-17 LAB. The authorization of the bond sale was inadvertently left off. That's all I have.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, that's great. Okay, Lindsay Capps and Peter T. Up next. Actually, and Andy from Metro can come up as well.
Co-Chair Gerard, Co-Chair Reed, members of the subcommittee, for the record, I'm Lindsay Capps, Acting Chief Education Officer and Education Policy Advisor to Governor Kate Brown. We're coming here today to request support for the capital and general fund necessary to complete the Oregon statewide longitudinal data system, which was directed to be completed under Senate Bill 909 and has been prioritized by Governor Brown. The project has to date met the requirements set forth by the DAS CIO through its stage gate process, and if approved, would be slated for completion by October of 2017. The project has been moved through the Ways and Means Education Subcommittee, and with that, I'll turn it over to Peter Tromba, our Research and Policy Director at the Chief Education Office, to describe more project purpose, deliverables, and a financial breakdown. But we thank you for your consideration of this request.
Co-chairs of the committee and members of the committee, my name is Peter Tromba, and I'm the Policy and Research Director for Chief Ed Office. Briefly, not only was this mandated by Senate Bill 909, but it was also reaffirmed as Senate Bill 215, which involved a pretty significant work group of stakeholders who reaffirmed their interest in it. Also, since the original inception of the project, we've had a good discussion in our state about student data privacy, generally, and then specifically with respect to longitudinal data, and this project has continued to be supported even through that process. The project would enable us to establish educational investment priorities more generally, and probably most importantly, to be able to evaluate the effectiveness of current strategic investments in our system and determine where to spend resources in the future. The first day the system is online, we will contain 25 years of existing state longitudinal data, mostly from the K-12 system, community colleges, and higher education, and also a little bit from pre-K. What we're asking for in this request is $2.922 million in bonds, which pays for the cost of the software and modifications that are done by our vendor to modify it specifically to Oregon's needs. In conclusion, this is a well-conceived solution. It's been vetted pretty extensively, give great benefit to the state, and we thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Chairs Gerard and Reed, members of the committee, I'm Andy Cotugno from Metro, and we're a partner with the Willamette Falls LOCKS project, and I'm here to provide a letter of support from our council president, Tom Hughes, in support of that request. The importance of this request is that now's the time to act. The task force that you set up has started to come up with a recommendation by the end of this calendar year on how should we approach a permanent solution for the LOCKS. The president's budget includes the funds to allow the Corps of Engineers to get started on their due diligence to figure out what are the choices and what are the pros and cons of those choices for what we might do with the LOCKS. But it's important to recognize that the core traditional approach of weighing national economic benefit, that is moving large quantities of agricultural and timber project products, isn't going to be there. That market for this set of locks went away a long time. In today's world, we're looking to repurpose those locks into historic and cultural tourism and recreation and produce a different kind of economic benefit that we need to be able to document. The second part is that the CORE's due diligence process is going to take quite a number of years, and we've requested funds here for an interim fix at a pretty low cost to open the locks sooner rather than later and use that time period to demonstrate that there really is a repurposed purpose for the locks, so that when we get to the point of negotiating an agreement with the CORE, we have good information on what the potential to Oregon might be towards a permanent reopening. Thank you for your support.
Oh, thanks so much. Tracy Hawkshaw, excuse me. Hawk.
She's coming up.
Is she?
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's on a difficult one.
My voice goes sometimes.
Hudson. Hello, Co-Chair Girard and members of the committee. My name is Tracy Hodson, and I'm a history teacher and a women's studies instructor at Chemeketa Community College here in Salem. I'm also the president of the Chemeketa Faculty Association and the secretary of the Oregon Education Association Community College Council. Now, as faculty, we're on the front lines of education, but Professor Larry Levine's tragic death at Umpqua Community College last fall really showed us that we might be on a different kind of front line that we aren't very comfortable with. And I think most of us, when we heard of that event, thought immediately of a classroom that we know well and students that we know well and wonder what would happen if we were there. And the seeming randomness of the shooting really made it feel as if all of us anywhere were the potential target next. And people felt very edgy and very vulnerable. I'm very scared, and that was clear after the time. You could see behaviors on campus you didn't see before. People walking across campus, moving their head back and forth, scanning the perimeter. People locking doors, people jumping when they just heard an odd sound. Students coming up to teachers and announcing they're now carrying a gun on campus because they felt that they needed to be safe. All of these things were happening, and people were looking around the college to see what they could do to be safe. And many of them found colleges that didn't have basic security measures, classroom doors that can't be locked, or they can only be locked from the outside, buildings where people are coming and going, and there's no way for you to be safe. So we would ask for our students and all of our faculty to be able to have certain safety security measures so that when they come on campus, at least for that time, they can feel relatively safe so they can focus on getting themselves ready for the next step in their lives. So, thank you.
Well, thank you for your testimony. Excuse me. Anybody else out there that wants to testify that didn't sign up, or now's the time to do it? There's a lot of bodies out there. I don't see anybody moving. Okay, Rep. Hoyle and Senator Devlin. This should be fun.
You want to do it from up here or down there? What do you want?
Oh, do it down there. I like it official.
I need to put a sport coat on.
And trust me, Richard, I'm going to have a question for you.
Oh, down to 1 minute.
Yeah.
That's why Rep. Hoyle and I were having a debate whether to be down here or not.
The timer asked if I should cut you down to 30 seconds.
Okay, I was going to say age before beauty, but I'm going to go first instead. So, Representative Val Hoyle, I represent West Eugene and Junction City, and I am here to speak in favor of funding the dock project in Warrenton. This request is about keeping jobs in rural Oregon, and the fishing industry is the lifeblood of our coastal community. This will ensure approximately 300 jobs will stay in Warrenton, and that is a town of 5,000 people, so that's significant, and these are good-paying jobs. So since the fire destroyed the dock and the processing facility, Pacific Seafood has set up a temporary facility nearby to keep people employed and to keep the fishing industry functioning. The assistance from the legislature will ensure that these jobs stay in Warrenton for a very long time. All of you.
Vice Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19, I would like to concur with all the comments of my colleague to my right, only to state additionally that we all know about the situation that occurred at Warrenton. We know the number of jobs that will be lost if we cannot have a permanent facility there. We know the impact on the fishing industry if we do not have this facility there. We know that the original purpose, or one of the original core purposes of lottery bonds, was economic development. And when you compare the cost of this, even though it sounds like a lot, $3 million, 300 jobs, it's actually a pretty good return, particularly if those jobs are going to be there for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years. And so with that, I will just say that I'm very much in favor of this, was in favor of it in the last session, and I think it's a good investment for the city of Warrenton and a good investment for the state.
I will add that I don't think there's too much opposition to that proposal, but the problem they're having is with DEQ and the Division of State Lands getting their permits as well, so maybe we should try to help them with that as well. Okay. Yeah. Any questions or comments? We're free to comment on all these projects if you wish.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just would say I think that's an excellent point. I know there's efforts underway, particularly around also improving how water is dealt with in the facility. But having visited the destroyed dock area, I'm glad this proposal's back. It's one of those things that wasn't quite ready last session. So thank you for bringing it back.
Great. Thank you both of you.
Mr. Chair,
throw in your
30 seconds on the Sunshine Mill project that got cut off. Sunshine Mill Copa Divino is a neat project downtown the Dalles. Jim Martin's an old friend of mine, and he started this, and he was actually on Shark Tank, and so there's a long history. But anyway, through a lot of private funding and whatnot, he has become the second largest winemaker in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And Copa Divino is what's the Budweiser, you know, that distribute?
InBev.
InBev, yeah. They are actually distributed by InBev nationally. And they've currently got about 85 jobs now downtown the Dalles just in the last two or three years. But they're pleading with the city of the Dalles for infrastructure and land to expand because they want to stay downtown. And it's one of those situations where they're being lobbied by other states and economic development directors to pull them away. So this is just kind of a retention ask to be able to keep them. Thank you.
Rep. Smith, you got anything down there?
Oh, not at this time, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair, didn't you have an ask that you wanted to make something?
I think that is probably more appropriate for a non-bonding setting.
Okay.
So
all
thank
right.
you,
probably.
Mr. Chair.
Richard? I want to thank everybody we got through an awful lot of testimony, and we did it pretty efficiently, and thank you so much. We're adjourned.